This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin, here with the Peoria Symphony Orchestra's George Stelluto and violinist Catherine Cho. She's the featured soloist in tomorrow night's concert, Scottish Fantasy, which kicks off the PSO's new season. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the Scottish Fantasy for violin and orchestra. I think of the works on the program, this would is most likely to be the one that people are unfamiliar with. But it's an interesting piece. It incorporates a lot of Scottish folk melodies in its movements.
Yes, it does. Each movement actually contains a different Scottish melody. Some are more dance-like, and some are a little bit more elegiac, and some are melancholic. So you'll hear familiar tunes throughout the work.
And we should note that this piece was composed in the late 1800s. So this is at a time when a lot of composers were rediscovering folk music traditions of various nationalities. So Brooke here is doing something that a lot of his contemporaries were doing at the same time. George?
Sure. Actually, would have been also a period where kind of national styles of music were emerging. So with Dvorak especially. So what you will hear in this kind of era of music is that's why they started grabbing onto these folk traditions and some of these folk idioms within different cultures, is because that's what they were using to kind of show the uniqueness of their culture in composition.
And so I'm curious why Brooke, who's not a Scottish composer, was drawn to Scottish folk music and incorporated that into at least one of his pieces.
That's another aspect of the Romantic era, that there was a fascination with the exotic or what seemed like the mysterious, and often that meant somewhere where you didn't live. So the French, for instance, were very kind of obsessed. A lot of French composers were obsessed with Spanish music, and other composers like Brooke, you know, and Mendelssohn, he would go to Italy, he would go to Scotland, and they would just come back full of these ideas based on that. And that kind of fed that romantic spirit.
Setting aside the folk music elements, Catherine, I'm curious what your experience of the piece is, since you've obviously now had a chance to live inside it and experience it in a much more intimate way than just those of us at the concert will be able to.
Well, it has been part of my life for a very, very long time, for decades. I unfortunately have never visited that part of the country, and so for me it's also a bit of a magical, imaginary connection via the music, and it's very picturesque. Since I was a little girl, I always heard the music in a very picturesque landscape and very colorful, and for me it's also very personal and emotional music, and so when I play it now, decades later, it actually digs up a lot of childhood reflections and memories now as a grown up to play it. So I do have a very intimate relationship with the music.
You know, and that's something interesting, you know, as a musician, you both have this experience that you get to perform a piece or engage with a piece, but then you get to come back to it years later. Mm-hmm. And it might be 5 years, it might be 20 years, but talk a little bit about how your take on a piece, any piece, whether it's, you know, the Brooke or you know, the Beethoven Violin Concerto, how that changes and how your own life informs your interpretation?
That's a very good question. The music informs our lives, and our lives inform the music, that's for sure. And I think one of the great joys and gifts of playing an instrument is that you can revisit the same works many, many times, not only in performance, but I have the opportunity to revisit them through my teaching as well. And so right now, I feel like my teaching has educated me in a very deep way about the performer's relationship to the music on the page. And so I feel like now when I look at the music, I do feel a very new perspective as a busy, active teacher mm-hmm. because in that space, there's a lot of magic. And so I feel like in that distance, I've learned different layers and in the communicative aspect of the music.
Another piece on the program is the Dvorak Seventh Symphony. This is one of the late symphonies, along with the Ninth, often mm-hmm. considered his great symphonies. What should we know about this piece, particularly for someone who might be more familiar with, say, the New World Symphony?
Well, let's see. I've referred to the Brooke as a kind of musical, mystical postcard that you would receive from Brigadoon. And I know you're interested in musical theater, so I had to get that in. But the Dvorak Seventh Symphony is kind of the same thing in a kind of abstract way, full of – it's a kind of a darker, stormier kind of symphony. It doesn't end in major, but it's full of rhythm and fire. And so it's almost like you're experiencing the woods and the nature around Prague. And maybe you're sitting on certain movements, you're sitting by a campfire and you're hearing some old Czech folk tales. It itself has also this kind of mystical quality that's, like I said before, was a hallmark of the Romantic era. So it's certainly got that exotic quality to it.
And I can't remember if Bruch and Dvorak are exact contemporaries, but they're very much, they're near contemporaries.
Yeah.
So they're working in the same environment and they're sort of pointing musically in the same general direction.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, if you're a music nerd, Dvorak's Seventh Symphony is kind of a response to Brahms' Third Symphony. So he heard the Brahms' Third Symphony and then he wrote the Seventh. But also, shortly before he wrote this, there were some premieres of some Wagner operas in Prague. And Wagner, of course, had died already, but they received their Prague premieres, and it's pretty likely that Dvorak would have been at those. So all through the rehearsals so far this week, you know, people are coming up and it's like, oh, you know, that reminds me of, like, Flying Dutchman Overture, that little chromatic line there. So there's all this material, and I think that adds to it because that adds to the mystery and it adds to the magic in the way that if you can imagine his mind just kind of overflowing with the influence of his friend Brahms and the greatness of Wagner.
And Catherine, in addition to your performance tomorrow night, this is sort of the culmination of a week of activities that you've had in the community. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been up to and what you've been involved in over the past couple of days?
Well, it's been a very memorable week, very meaningful on many levels. One, because I had the opportunity to meet and connect with people of all ages throughout the week. We played for pre-K kids. We played for middle school children. We met people at a coffee shop where we played last night. And for me, it's unusual to have the opportunity to meet and greet, shake hands with, have conversations with about the music, about life in this way, because typically you play a concert, you finish playing, they clap you bow, then you leave. And it feels a little awkward, actually, afterwards, and slightly empty, if I'm going to be honest. And so this is not an empty feeling at all. And community engagement has become a really important part of my life on many levels. I'm teaching a community engagement seminar at Juilliard right now in our attempt to really inform musicians of today that we are citizens of the world and we're not just inhabitants of a practice room with four walls and no window. And in addition, I'm very active as a member of Music for Food, which is a musician-led initiative to bring awareness to local communities about poverty and food insecurity in homes. And we play concerts to benefit different food pantries. We have a new branch of the New York chapter in my neighborhood in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, where we give a couple concerts a year and draw in the young people and their families to listen to great music, but also to feel the compassion and kindness in their hearts to want to help those in need. And so this week has been a beautiful extension of that part of my heart, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
George, these appearances are part of the Resident Artist Week, which is an event that the PSO organizes every season. Can you remind us what the Resident Artist Week is and what its purpose is?
Basically, it's what its title is. You know, one of our guest artists comes in and they basically take up residence in the community for about a week. And they get to meet people. They get to interact with people and tell their story as much as they can in music, but also in eye-to-eye contact and personal contact. So, you know, we go everywhere from senior centers to schools to coffee shops. We've had people in the past play at, you know, bars, and we haven't had any bar brawls yet. But, you know, it's a way to have somebody identify with the community and have people in the community identify with them.
And Catherine, one of the activities that you're involved with outside of your performing life is music for food, and in conjunction with that, the PSO is collecting and accepting food donations, and that will continue through tomorrow night's concert.
Yes, our goal is to raise 250 meals for the community. That equates to about 300 pounds of food. And we are collecting cans at the concerts and all of the events during this Resident Artist Week.
And can you talk about why is this a cause that's particularly important to you?
Well, community engagement is very close to me, near and dear to my heart. And in addition to this class that we teach at Juilliard about community engagement, I'm also an active member of Music for Food in New York. And I think it's very important not only to reach out to the community, but also to become very aware of what's happening to your next door neighbor. You may not realize that they might be a food insecure home. And so bringing that awareness to the surface is a very important part of my daily life.
We've been talking with George Stiluto, conductor of the Peoria Symphony Orchestra, and violinist Catherine Cho. The PSO's new season opens with a concert tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Peoria Civic Center Theater. It features Brooks' Scottish Fantasy for violin and orchestra and the Symphony No. 7 by Dvorak. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks
for having us.
And Illinois Central College is presenting its production of One Man, Two Governors. It's a modern-day adaptation of The Servant of Two Masters, set in England in the 1960s. An out-of-work musician gets hired by two different men, and he tries to keep the two from meeting. Hilarity and complications ensue. The show opens tonight and continues through next Sunday at the ICC Performing Arts Center. Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers. Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.